This is an address by Ralph Wegers on animal magnetism and metaphysics. And it was given at the Christian Science Benevolent Association in Chestnut Hill on September the 13th, 1971. I'm not going to talk about the nursing program because, of course, you know more about it than I do. But to help to provide a balanced approach to nursing, more to the metaphysical standpoint than anything else, and that term metaphysics I am going to be using this evening because I believe it is an awfully important term for us to get acquainted with. Now, I would like to start by mentioning that I think that whatever we are doing in the movement, whether it is practitioner, teacher, administrator or nurse or whatever it might be, that there are certain things in our leaders' writings that we ought to keep pretty much before our thought. There are things that we shouldn't just take for granted, but we should remind ourselves and remind ourselves what our leader has given us. And I would like to mention two of those things right at the start. One of those things is the way, and that's Miscellaneous Writings, page 355. And in this little article, Mrs. Eddy mentions two aspects, two opposite aspects presented in the present stage of our progress. And that was at her time, and I believe is just as applicable today, and she speaks of it as the full-orbed promise and the gaunt want. It seems to me that we are just as much confronted with those two opposite aspects today as we were then. And in this article, The Way, she speaks of three stages of growth. And I like to go over these once in a while because I like to keep reminded of them. One is self-knowledge and how important that is, not only on the part of ourselves, but from the standpoint of the present state of patience, a sense of knowing ourselves, where we stand. I was talking to Mr. H., here that I think that as a practitioner I have learned these last few years that there are a good many things to learn that I had not learned. Sometimes you are apt to get to the place where you just think, well, I have it now, I have it and I'm going to proceed from here. But I don't believe that is possible. I think that a practitioner or teacher or nurse is constantly in the process of renewing and renewing and gaining added unfoldment. That is self-knowledge. Another is humility. She speaks of that, and I think that we should be looking up to humility, not down upon it, because she says here that it is that which triumphs over the flesh, and it is the genius of Christian Science. That's from Miscellaneous Writings 355, line 23. The third stage of growth is love, which she speaks of as the greatest of all states and stages of being. That it is a love that is irrespective of self, rank, or following. Again, from Miscellaneous Writings, page 357. We speak of that so often, and we are so convinced that love is important, but sometimes it is well for us to get a good look at ourselves and see just how much of love we are talking about, or how much of it we are really living. And she speaks of divine love as being the substance of Christian Science, the basis of its demonstration. Yes, its foundation and superstructure. Then she says, love impels good works. Love is greatly needed and must be had to mark the way in divine science. She speaks of this way in divine science as being absolute divine science. And she says, walk ye in it. But remember that science is demonstrated by degrees, and our demonstration rises only as we rise in the scale of being. Again, Miscellaneous Writings, page 359. Then there is another article of our leaders, and I speak of these because I think it would be well if you could encourage your nurses to read these short articles quite often. The other is Pond and Purpose, Miscellaneous Writings, page 203. You are all familiar with that. It is so wonderfully written. Pond and Purpose brings out, as you know, three baptisms, and they are baptisms that we all must really accept. And I think the second one, the baptism of the Holy Ghost, is marvellous for us in that she says, it is the Spirit of truth cleansing from all sin, giving mortals new motives, new purposes, new affections, all pointing upward. And she says, this mental condition settles into strength, freedom, deep-toned faith in God, and a marked loss of faith in evil, in human wisdom, human policy, ways and means. It develops individual capacity, increases the intellectual activities, and so quickens moral sensibilities that the great demands of spiritual sense are recognized, and these rebuke the material senses holding sway over human consciousness. If I could be permitted to recommend something to you, I would recommend that you keep these two articles pretty active in the consciousness of your nurses and perhaps encourage your patients to read them. They are short articles. They are right to the point. They are not difficult to accept. And I really believe that the more our consciousness is being leavened by some of these marvellous statements of our leader, the more we are going to be able to find the ways and means of doing what we are doing, whether it is nursing, whether it is practitioner, teacher, whether it is an administrator. It doesn't make any difference what may be our particular role in the movement. The same state of consciousness is required all the way through. Now, I thought I would like to talk to you just a little about my present work and why I am doing what I am doing. Let me just say that I entered the practice of Christian Science in Chicago in 1925, and I was actively engaged in it until 1946, when I went on the board of lectureship and was on the board of lectureship until 1960. And then I served as associate editor of our religious periodicals until 1965. And then I went over as manager of the board of lectureship until January 1969. And then I decided that I wanted to withdraw from the administrative work, and I would like to tell you why. I have witnessed tremendous growth in our movement. You folks will remember that from along in the 1920s and 1930s, we just grew by leaps and bounds. And then in the 40s, we sort of levelled off. And then in the 50s and 60s, we have been going downhill. There is no need of our denying it. That is just what has been going on. And that has troubled me greatly. I have wondered why, and I wondered why I wasn't doing better healing work and just what I needed to know. And so I decided that I would like to devote my time wholly to the practice and to begin talking about and teaching I'm going to read that again. And so I decided that I would like to devote my time wholly to the practice and to research. If we want to call it that, to learn, to understand some of the things I have been talking about and teaching. You know, it's awfully easy to teach what you have been taught to teach. But what does it mean? I have felt that what I wanted to do was to find out where we are going wrong. Altogether, too many Christian Scientists are not being healed, or not being healed quickly and permanently. Fine workers, good practitioners, good teachers and all. I kept asking myself, why? Why is this going on? Why am I not doing better work? I could certainly talk it in a pretty good shape, but what about proving it? And so I just decided that I would like to spend as much time as possible in research, and it was something our leader said that encouraged me, and it awakened me to the term of animal magnetism. And I really believe that all the way through, the difficulties that we are really enduring is due to our lack of ability to perceive and handle the claims of animal magnetism. I believe that unhandled animal magnetism is at the bottom of all our difficulties. But our leader said this, I shall not forget the cost of investigating for this age the methods and power of error, while the ways, means and potency of truth had flowed into my consciousness as easily as dawns the morning light and shadows flee. The metaphysical mystery of error, its hidden paths, purpose and fruits, at first defied me. I was saying all the time, come not thou into the secret, but at length took up the research according to God's command. Miscellaneous Writings 222. And I thought, how grateful I am that she did, because if she hadn't taken up this research, it is possible that we wouldn't have Christian Science today. And I have wondered if we don't take up that research and follow our leader in it, if we will have Christian Science tomorrow. That's the thing that disturbs me. And so in really digging into this thing, I find the 12th chapter of Revelation to be more and more meaningful to me, and perhaps if we just spoke about it a little bit. Mrs. Eddy speaks of the 12th chapter as having a special suggestiveness in connection with the 19th century. She speaks of the distinctive feature as reference to the present age. So this isn't just something in old literature. This 12th chapter of Revelation has something to do with us right now. And I began to appreciate it more to see, as Mrs. Eddy says, the woman in the apocalypse symbolizes the spiritual idea of God. And this spiritual idea of God is typified by the woman in travail, bringing forth a man-child. And then the dragon, she says, stands for the sum total of human error, and it is holding untiring watch to impede the offspring of the spiritual idea, which is science. Mrs. Eddy says, from Genesis to Apocalypse, serpent and dragon pursue with hatred the spiritual idea. That's Science and Health, page 564. Where? In individual and collective human consciousness. Then that chapter speaks of a war in heaven in which Michael overcame the dragon and cast the dragon to earth. That is where I began to prick up my ears. Here, the dragon was endeavouring to stop the unfoldment, the coming of Christian Science, and it couldn't do it. Now, what is it doing? Being wroth with the woman? It has come to the late war with the remnant of her seed. Who is the remnant of her seed? You. Me. And then the attempt of the dragon is to prevent the fulfillment of Christian Science. It couldn't prevent the appearing of it, the unfolding of it. Now it would try to prevent the fulfillment. Now I want to read just a couple of paragraphs from Adam Dickey's memoirs. I know that they are not legitimate as far as the publication of the book is concerned, but the things that he has in there is no question about it at all. Mrs. Eddy told Mr. Dickey, "If you stay here until you learn to handle animal magnetism, I will make healers of you. I had to do it, and did it for 40 years, and I understood it all. Now it has gotten to the point where the students must take up this work and meet animal magnetism. I cannot do it for you. You must do it for yourself, and unless it is done, the cause will perish, and we will go along another 1900 years with the world sunk into the blackest night." Then she says, "Now, will you rouse yourselves? You have all the power of God with you to conquer this lie of mesmerism. The workers in the field are not healing because they are not meeting animal magnetism, which says they cannot heal." That's pretty straight stuff, don't you see? And it's something that gave me a great deal to meet in my own thought, because what, me? Why, I handle animal magnetism. I teach my pupils to handle animal magnetism. Of course I do. Sure. Superficially. Perfunctorily. I know in a way what the claim of animal magnetism is. Mrs. Eddy has outlined it. I know what its intent is, and I have been teaching that and trying to handle it, but there was something I learned that I hadn't seen before, and that was its strategy. Its claim is one thing, its intent is another. Its intent is its what, but its strategy is its how. And that is something I haven't been awakened to. I could see that what it would do would be to substitute error for truth in my consciousness, or substitute sense for soul, which it does, that is its way, but there was something I had to learn, that it would substitute the lesser for the greater in my consciousness, and get me so involved with the lesser that I would lose sight of the greater. I could see that it would substitute organization for church or movement, and get us so involved with organization that we would lose sight of movement. It would substitute human effort for divine unfoldment, and how it would do that. And this is something that was awfully hard for me to take. It would substitute healing for demonstration. With all that Mrs. Eddy said about healing, I just couldn't see how that was the lesser. But you see, she said that Jesus' healing was not alone to restore health, but to demonstrate his divine principle. That's from Science and Health with page 51. And one of the definitions of church is, "and the demonstration of divine science, thereby casting out devils or error and healing the sick." That's Science and Health, page 583. It would substitute servant for son. It would substitute labor for work. It would substitute mechanics for inspiration. For instance, in the reading of our lesson, we probably are very faithful in the reading of our lesson, but suppose we just go through it mechanically and lose sight of the inspiration that it brings to us. What good would it do us? What could it do us just to go through the motions of it, as perhaps others would in religious exercises? And then I could see how, in connection with nursing, it would substitute the physical for the metaphysical and get us so involved in the physical that we would lose sight of the metaphysical. Now, to me, I haven't anything against organisation, as you know, but I do believe that church and movement is greater and includes the lesser, and that if we approach the organisation from the standpoint of the movement, we have a much more vital organisation. And now with healing, I just feel that healing is so important, but I think it is of lesser importance than demonstration. Perhaps I can give you an illustration of that. A fine practitioner came to see me one day on crutches, and she'd had a fall and had injured her hip, and she'd had, I think, 4 or 5 practitioners over a period of a couple of years, and wasn't getting anywhere. And when she came to me, I thought, well, gee whiz, am I just going to be another practitioner on this case? She's worn out 4 or 5 of them already. And so I said to her something like this, do you really believe that God can take care of this? And she said, of course I do, don't you? Well, I said, you know, I have a question about it. I have a doubt about it. You do? Yes, I do. Well, she said, what do you mean? I said, answer this. Where was God when this accident happened? Was he on the job, or was he off on a little picnic or something? He certainly didn't cause it to happen. But did he permit or allow it to happen? She said, but here it is. I said, that's the trouble. If God permitted it or allowed it to happen, I don't believe that I am bigger than God, that I can pick up the pieces and put it back together again. So I suppose I just will have to let it continue as it is. She said, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, it never happened. That's the fact. Accidents are unknown to mind. And here we are, assuming that something happened under the government of God, and we are going to try to correct it. We are going to try to heal it. Well, she said, if we demonstrated that it never happened, that would be the healing of it, wouldn't it? And I said, it sure would. And I do believe that we are going on healing and healing and something, assuming that it has happened under God's government and care, and just keep going and going and going, rather than checking ourselves and saying, how could this thing be? That is just one phase of the demonstration. I might say that very soon she was coming in with a cane rather than crutches, and she moved out of the country, and the last I heard from her was that she was working out in her garden, so I feel that perhaps something had happened there. There is something that, if we are looking for it, that I am going to say that there are going to be 2 words tonight that I am going to stress as I have stressed them with myself, and they are animal magnetism and metaphysics. I think those 2 words we have used and used and have gotten so familiar with them that we lie right down beside them and go to sleep with them, but we have to wake up and see what these terms mean. And in our week's lesson, if we are looking for things that will be helpful to us, we will find them. But so often we just go over them and read them and read them. In this week's lesson, there is a statement, matter examined in the light of divine metaphysics disappears. That's Science and Health, page 274. I think that is a marvellous statement. But body doesn't disappear. Matter disappears. Now, the last time I had the privilege of talking to superintendents of nurses, we got onto the subject of the distinction between the human and mortal in order to understand the relationship of the human to the divine. And I believe that throughout the movement there is not a clear-cut recognition of the distinction between the human and the mortal. We sort of take those words as meaning one and the same thing. Haven't you found that to be the case in your experience? And Mrs. Eddy, in many instances, doesn't make any distinction between human and mortal. But when she does it in no unmistakable terms, like when she speaks of the coincidence of the divine with the human being the acme of Christian Science. That's in Miscellaneous Writings, page 100. She never speaks of the coincidence of the divine with the mortal. And so, if you would like to have me, or whether you would or not, I'm going to use a little chart here that has been helpful to me and has been helpful to others, just to get straight on this human and divine, human and mortal. And this is something you could use with your nurses if you wanted to, because it could be very helpful to them. Just head this first circle, divine, and he shows, I'm showing three circles, one on the left, one in the middle, and one on the right. The first circle, divine, on the left. The second, human, that's in the middle. And the third, mortal, that's on the right-hand side. All right. Where do we go from here? Let's go to the dictionary. We find that the word divine means of and pertaining to God. The word human means of and pertaining to mankind. And the word mortal means of and pertaining to death or subject to death. So now we have the technical distinction between those three terms. Suppose now we see the human and mortal as related. Underlying every normal human footstep or concept that includes body, home, church, or whatever it might be, there is the adverse influence of mortal mind limiting, restricting, perverting, destroying, distorting. And about the only thing we can be completely sure of with this is that sometimes the human is willing to completely fulfill the mortal and die, then maybe get around to the divine in some unknown way. Now, if we will put three circles under it and have this line from the divine, which is on the left-hand side, to the human, which is in the middle, and see the relationship of the human to the divine, we will see that underlying every normal human footstep or concept, there is a divine law sustaining it, protecting it, preserving it, and making it fruitful. And in the degree that this is fulfilled, this is overcoming step by step by step. And that is putting off mortality, which is the right circle, and putting on immortality. Now, to have some sort of example of this, let us assume that this circle represents $10 in gold and its equivalent in the treasury. And this is a $10 bill, and this is a $10 counterfeit bill. The $10 bill is on the left circle. The $10 counterfeit bill is on the right circle. Now, this counterfeit bill looks exactly like the $10 bill, but it has nothing back of it in the treasury, so it is a rank deception. That's the $10 counterfeit bill. This $10 bill has no intrinsic value, no value in the paper it is written on. Its value is in the $10 in gold or silver with which it coincides. As long as this relationship is maintained, the $10 bill will do anything that the $10 in gold and silver will do. Then the integrity of this bill is not in the paper it is written on. It is in the law which relates that to the $10 bill in gold or silver. Now, this $10 bill has redemptive value. When it is redeemed, you get something in its place, and then it is put out of circulation. But the counterfeit bill has no redemption. It has nothing back of it. So the moment it is detected, it is put out of circulation. Now, we will go down a little further here and say that this represents Christ. That's the left-hand circle. This Jesus, which is the middle circle, and this Adam, which is the right-hand circle. The coincidence of the Christ and Jesus is the remedy for Adam or error. That's Science and Health, page 534. Now, in connection with this, there are two terms, resurrection and ascension. Resurrection is the human yielding to the divine. That's Science and Health, page 593. The ascension is the human yielded to the divine. We are in the resurrection now, where spiritualization of thought, a new and higher idea of immortality or spiritual existence, material being yielding to spiritual understanding. Now, in the resurrection, this is overcome, mortality. In the ascension, this is yielded up, and we have only the divine, which is all we had in the first place from an absolute standpoint. Now, every bit of healing that is taking place today in Christian Science is taking place in the resurrection. Let's be sure of that. Where spiritualization of thought is entering in, where a newer and higher idea of immortality or spiritual existence is coming to the fore, where material being is yielding to spiritual understanding. Now I'm going to do something that I haven't done before. I'm going to ask you, under this divine, that's the left-hand circle, I'm going to make another circle here, and under this divine, to call this metaphysical. So it's divine and metaphysical. Under human, call it physical. So it's human and physical. And under mortal, put the word material. So you've got mortal and material. We are going to gain tonight some sense of the relationship between the physical and the metaphysical, rather than the physical to the material. Now, I think that right here I would like to give you an illustration. We will use a hand, and let's say I ask you what this is, and you say it is matter, flesh, blood, bones, mortal, material. And I say to you, would you be willing to refer to it as a human concept? And you say, a human concept of what? Well, a human concept of some faculty or capacity of the divine mind. Oh, yes. then the integrity of this hand is not in the hand, but in the divine mind. Just as the integrity of this $10 bill is not in the bill, but in what is back of it in the treasury. Now suppose an abnormal growth comes on this hand. You say, is that a human concept too? No, I would call that a mortal belief. You say, well, is the integrity of that abnormal growth in the divine mind? No, there is nothing abnormal in the divine mind to which the growth could be related in any way, any more than this counterfeit bill has in relation to the gold. All right. Now, to see the integrity of this hand is in the divine mind, but not the integrity of the growth, would be a Christian Science treatment, which would destroy the growth, but not the hand. If they were both the same, it would destroy the hand too. So let us be sure that in metaphysics, in Christian Science, nothing normal in the human sense of things is destroyed. It is preserved. The only thing that is destroyed is that which would limit or restrict or pervert or destroy or distort it. Because it is only this over here that is put off. This is really redeemed, that is really redeemed and saved. Now, I think this is basic to our approach to the human body, to the human situation, to an organ, gland or cell. If it is true that the integrity of this hand is in the divine mind, then the integrity of every organ, cell, gland, tissue of the human body is in the divine mind, and the divine mind preserves it. You remember Mrs. Eddy says, sin, sickness and death must at length quail before the divine rights of intelligence, and then the power of mind over the entire functions and organs of the human system will be acknowledged. That's Science and Health, page 384. So we have to realize that Christian Science teaches a very close relationship between the divine and the human, just as it does in Christ and Jesus. Don't you see? She says, John saw the human and divine coincidence shown in the man Jesus as divinity embracing humanity in life and its demonstration, reducing to human perception and understanding the life which is God. That's Science and Health, page 561. Now, this up here is animal magnetism that would relate the human to the mortal. And this is divine science that relates the human to the divine. And that I think that if you get that recognition of it there, it will clarify some things for you very much. Now, to go on from here, some time ago I was asked to write an article on spiritual healing for our periodical, and I was just thrilled. I liked that, so I went to get busy on it, and I thought, I will find out what Mrs. Eddy has to say about the subject. How many times do you think Mrs. Eddy mentions spiritual healing in Science and Health? Once. How many times does she mention spiritual healing in her prose works? Three times. That's all she says about it. But what about metaphysical healing? She mentions metaphysical healing 7 times in Science and Health and 25 times in prose works. and I tell you it gave me a much better appreciation of this word, metaphysics. As I said, I'd been so familiar with it, so acquainted with it, that I could lie right down beside it and go to sleep, and now I'm beginning to see that in this 5-year plan that the Mother Church is putting out for us, that we should all consider very seriously, we had got to get a right sense of body, a right sense of the physical. And I would bet you, and I'm not a betting man, that if most of you would be honest, you would say that you have always thought of the physical and material as practically the same thing. Haven't you? I had. It is going to surprise you greatly to see that metaphysics takes the physical out of man, out of matter, I'm sorry, takes the physical out of matter and puts it into mind with a small m. And we are going to see how it does it right now. The thing that awakened me to this, I think, more than I can say, is that wonderful statement of Paul's where he said, present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service, and be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Living sacrifice. I couldn't get that. For mostly a sacrifice is a dead sacrifice, you know, but present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. That's Romans 12. To me, that means that today, if we will understand our body rightly, every heartbeat glorifies God. Every breath we take glorifies God. Every action of the body glorifies God. That's 1 Corinthians 6. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could get that sense of body? Now, I am convinced that our greatest difficulty in healing is our faulty sense of body. I don't think there's any question about it. Suppose now that I have two lenses and one has a distortion in it, and I give this lens to you and say, now look at this picture, and I take one that hasn't any distortion and look at it. You're going to see a distorted picture, and I'm going to see a picture that is straight. So we get to talking about it. Well, we can't get together, and so I say to you, take that picture to the shop up there and have them take the distortion out of it. I can't do anything with it. It's just there. Now then, if I give you my lens and you look at it, you see the thing as it is. There never were two pictures, and the distortion was never in the picture. We look at the physical body through the lens of material sense, and we see it to be material. We look at it through the lens of spiritual sense, metaphysical sense, and we see it as it really is. And we are going to see what it really is. That is one illustration that I have, but I want you to pass this around. I want to show you a nice blue sheet of paper. Isn't that a nice blue sheet of paper? There's much laughter because the blue sheet of paper is encased in a clear yellow plastic, so it appears green. Now, I know that's a blue sheet of paper, but every one of you thinks it's a green sheet, don't you? Because it's green, isn't it? All right. But it's blue. Only it's been put behind yellow cellophane. But it's blue, and it was always blue. It wasn't green at all. Now, suppose we think of the blue as the divine and the green. The blue is the divine and the green is the human. Isn't that what it appears to be? It doesn't appear to be blue, does it? It appears to be something else. But isn't it blue? You say, well, if this isn't green, if it is blue, I'm going to throw this thing away and put it in the waste paper basket. But you are throwing away the blue. You say, well, if the human isn't real, why not? Let's dispose of it. Destroy it. You can't do it, any more than you can dispose of the green here without disposing of the blue. You see what I mean? How we get fooled by the senses. Now, I wish you would make a note of this article I wrote in the December Journal 1957, What of Our Bodies? It has to do with a healing that I had when I was on the board of lectureship. I had a terribly infected finger, and it just loomed up there and it touched everything. Even a handkerchief was like a knife going through it. I had done everything I knew how. I was taking a train from Sacramento to Portland, and I didn't relish that long day's trip. I sat down in the parlour car and turned to God and said, God, what can I do? And I heard the voice, you can read Science and Health. And I thought, for heaven's sake, I have read Science and Health and read it and read it. I said, all right. So I found myself opening to page 427, where it says, immortal mind governing all must be acknowledged as supreme in the physical realm, so-called, as well as in the spiritual. I was a little disturbed by the physical realm business there. Being material, how could immortal mind be supreme in it? But I said, all right, and I opened to page 384 and read, sickness, sin, and death must at length quail before the divine rights of intelligence and then the power of mind over the entire functions and organs of the human system will be acknowledged. These two statements brought to thought more clearly than ever before that unless we consciously place our human bodies under the jurisdiction of immortal mind and keep them there, we unconsciously permit them to be under the jurisdiction of mortal mind with its numerous oppressive beliefs. The acknowledgement of immortal mind's supremacy in the physical realm, so-called, brought welcome relief, and soon the finger was normal. The practitioner should also endeavour to free the minds of patients from any sense of subordination to their bodies, since God maintains human health and life. That's in Rudimental Divine Science, page 12. Now, these that I am giving you will be awfully good to share with your patients, even the experiences I have mentioned here. Now, I'm going to switch a little and consider the physical as related to the metaphysical rather than to the material. And I'm going to use another chart here. I'm going to put down two interlocking circles and then two interlocking circles over to the right. So the first one I'm going to call physical, and that interlocking circle is on the left. And the first one is physical and the second is mental. Then I'm going to call this other one on the right, this one moral and this one spiritual. So it's physical and mental and moral and spiritual. Even the doctors are recognizing that the mental and physical have a great deal in common. In fact, that the physical is more or less mental. We know that it is mental. We are dealing with the physical as a mental state rather than a material state. You say, no. You say, you have to have matter in order to have form or structure. So if there is form and structure in the body, it has got to be material. That isn't true. Form and structure are mental, not material. Mind forms, Mrs. Eddy talks about body and soul, and she says, identity is the reflection of spirit, the reflection in multifarious forms of the living principle, love. When we separate the physical and mental, as we ordinarily do, from the moral and spiritual, we get into all kinds of difficulties. But here the Christ comes along and says, there is no separation there. Those are one. So we see the spiritual, moral, mental, physical as one, inseparable. And that removes the belief that the physical is material. In fact, let's call this one the physical and this one over here the metaphysical. Now, would you believe that Mrs. Eddy has said some things about mental and physical perfection as related to spirit? Let's see what she says here. I'm going to read a little bit here that you're all familiar with, but I don't think it will do any harm. In the material world, thought has brought to light with great rapidity many useful wonders. With like activity have thought's swift pinions been rising towards the realm of the real, to the spiritual cause of those lower things which give impulse to inquiry. Belief in the material basis from which may be deduced all rationality is slowly yielding to the idea of a metaphysical basis, looking away from matter to mind as the cause of every effect. Materialistic hypotheses challenge metaphysics to meet in final combat. In this revolutionary period, like the shepherd boy with his sling, woman goes forth to battle with Goliath. And that's Science and Health, page 268. Now, the thing that I want to call particularly to your attention are these statements about metaphysics. Quote, metaphysics is above physics, and matter does not enter into metaphysical premises or conclusions. The categories of metaphysics rest on one basis, the divine mind. Metaphysics resolves things into thoughts and exchanges the objects of sense for the ideas of soul. That's Science and Health, 269. Let me read to you from Miscellaneous Writings, page 252, and take these down, if you will please. Christian Science is not only the acme of science, but the crown of Christianity. It is universal. It appeals to man as man, to the whole and not to a portion, to man physically as well as spiritually, and to all mankind. See how well she relates the physical and the spiritual there. Also from Miscellaneous Writings 234, I'll read the little preamble where she says that one should have ventured on such unfamiliar ground and self-forgetful should have gone on to establish this mighty system of metaphysical healing called Christian Science against such odds, even the entire current of mortality, is matter of grave wonderment to profound thinkers. But this is it, that in addition to this, she has made some progress, has seen far into the spiritual facts of being which constitute physical and mental perfection. In the midst of an age so sunken in sin and sensuality, seems to them still more inconceivable. She says she has seen far into the spiritual facts of being which constitute physical and mental perfection. Then take this, message for 1901. Today you meet to commemorate in unity the life of our Lord. and to rise higher and still higher in the individual consciousness most essential to your growth and usefulness. To add to your treasures of thought the great realities of being which constitute mental and physical perfection. Now, what I want to bring out here is how we are under the domination of Materia Medica. Materia Medica considers the physical and material to be one and the same thing. And all of its theories, all of its doctrines, all of its beliefs are built upon that, that the physical and material are one and the same thing. All right, we go along accepting that premise. What do we do but bring ourselves under the mesmerism of Materia Medica by accepting that premise? And the diseases that your patients and mine are contending with are the diseases which have been imposed upon them by Materia Medica. You see, disease has to be thought before it can be objectified or manifested. And the business of Materia Medica is to formulate diseases into names, nature, character, course, and set them down as entities and make you and me and everyone else subject to them. But that's mesmeric. Then they go along trying to heal the very things they have formed. Their whole healing activity is based upon trying to correct the things they have already formed. And so they are in an endless circle. Now suppose we see that the physical, the body, is related to metaphysics, not to matter. And we see that in metaphysics, matter does not enter into its conclusions, that it rests upon one basis, the divine mind. And so we begin to relate the physical to the metaphysical, just as we relate the human to the divine, rather than to the mortal. You see what this does to us? There is never a disordered physical body. There is no disorder in the physical. What we are dealing with here is that picture through the lens. We look at it through the lens of material sense, and we see the distorted, and we say that it is the physical that is distorted. It isn't. Jesus had a physical body, but it was not material. So he could walk on the water. He could transport himself. He could go through the resurrection, the ascension, and he could present the same body. I don't know whether this is authentic or not, but it's something I heard years ago. In a conversation with Mrs. Eddy, someone said, "Mother, I was wondering what you would do if somebody stood in a window and shot an arrow through your heart." She's supposed to have said, "Well, I think I would probably fuss around a bit trying to make you understand that nothing had really happened. But I couldn't make you understand, so I would take my body and go about my business, and you would take my body and bury it." Now, what did they bury but their concept of Mrs. Eddy? Don't you see? For instance, I sit here and you say, "Well, I guess that's Ralph Wagers." Suppose I pass away, which I'm not going to do. You bury me. You have buried your concept of me. But this is my concept of me just as much as it is yours, because we embrace our body in our thought. We will never be without it as long as we are in the resurrection, in the ascension. In the ascension, I don't know what happens there, but as long as we are in the resurrection, we are going to have a body that is visible. And you can call it physical if you want to. Now, In the little pamphlet Substance that you have probably seen, I have an article in there, Substance is Spirit, Not Matter. And I tell in there of a healing of a heart condition by realizing that the action of heart, rightly understood, is the action of mind, not the action of matter. And mind rests in action. It is perfect and harmonious in its action. That was the metaphysical aspect of heart action. And when the practitioner saw it, there was a complete healing. Another time, a friend of mine had a paralyzed bowel, and she never had a normal bowel movement. When she was born, something went wrong in the delivery, and her bowel was supposed to have been paralyzed. The doctor gave them a prescription that she could take to move her bowel, so she went through the Sunday school, she went through class, and she went into the practice part-time, and she was taking this stuff all the time. One day, up in the woods where we had a cottage, she said, "Frank, I wonder if I'm doing just right." And I said, "I wonder." And so we got into it, and I said, "Well, now, you are talking about bowel movement. That's action, isn't it?" "Well, there is only one action, isn't there? The action of mind. And mind isn't laboured or paralysed in its action in any way." We went on with this illustration, and finally she said, "Well, if that's the case, it doesn't make any difference what the condition of the bowel is, does it? It's what the condition of mind is." I said, "That's exactly right." The next morning, she had a normal bowel movement and has been having them ever since, and she lives in Sun City now. When I taught the normal class, I wanted to mention this. I wanted to be sure it was permanent, so I called her out there, and she said she'd had no trouble since. Now, you see, that was getting it into metaphysics. It was really lifting the physical. She still has a bowel, don't you see? But she has lifted it into the realm of mind. So I think that is this relation of the physical to the metaphysical. We get a new and much-needed approach to this 5-year goal, which is to strengthen the healing thrust of our movement and improve our ability to respond to the needs of mankind by spiritual means. Then it enables us to see the healing aspect of Christian Science in a new light. We are demonstrating metaphysical facts in the healing work, don't you see? And that's what does the healing. And in your work, and in the nurse's work, never lose sight of the value of the lesson sermons. They are of much more value than any of us realize. To the practitioner, to the nurse, to the patient, here are 26 subjects that cover the entire range of human experience, repeated twice a year. I teach Sunday school, a class of awfully smart 19-year-old kids, and believe me, you don't put anything over on those kids. And they are there with questions, and one of the things that I've found is they want to be sure that you are honest. If you don't know, tell them so. If you try to bluff it through, they will catch you every time. One day, a new fellow in the class who'd been baiting other teachers said, "Mr. Wagers, would you please explain to me how we happen to be in this mortal, material state when we are spiritual and perfect?" Well, I had had that sprung on me before, so I said, "You know, that is an interesting question, but it is the wrong question to ask." He said, "Why?" And I said, "Because there isn't any answer to it." Now, if I were going to ask a question, I would ask a question that had an answer to it. So I would say to you, "How am I going to get out of this thing that I seem to be in?" "There's an answer to that." He said, "I'll buy that." "There is just one little thing that I would like to speak to you about, and we had it in our lesson this last week about faith. In the Golden Text, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. We repeat that and repeat it and repeat it. I went to Dumelo's commentary, as I often do, to see what is said about it, and here are some of the things I thought were interesting. He says, firstly, invisible things about the types, copies, or shadows of heavenly realities or spiritual things. Well, isn't that all that the human is? A type or shadow of something like the $10 bill? Then he says, contrary to the ordinary way of thinking, it is our heavenly or spiritual that is real, and this is where faith comes in. Faith is that by which the invisible becomes real and the future becomes present. Then he brings out that faith. It's the assurance of things hoped for, the proof of things not seen. Then he brings out that faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the proof of things not seen. Now, I believe there is a great relationship between the words faith and metaphysical, and when we can connect faith with understanding, we have power. Jesus said, if we have faith as a grain of mustard seed, and you say to this mountain to remove, it will remove. It's power, and faith is power. I want to tell you of my early experiences. In my early 20s, I was healed of a difficult physical condition that I had quite often by just reading Science and Health, and I've never had it since. But I didn't know there was such a thing as a sentinel or journal. I knew there was a practitioner, but I didn't know there were church services or anything of that kind. I was just a lumberman up in the North Woods. And then I got to a place where there was a little society, and oh boy, to be able to talk to other Christian Scientists, to have a service, there was just a handful of us, was wonderful. I was enthusiastic. I was in my middle 20s then, and all at once they elected me reader. Well, I didn't know enough to be a reader, but I didn't know enough not to, so there I was. I didn't know enough about Christian Science to carry on a decent conversation with anybody about it. Along in the fall, I was elected in the summertime. A young man who'd been attending our services up there for the summer, and I'd met him and knew he was up there working on his father-in-law's berry farm, came to me and said, Ralph, I want you to help me in Christian Science. I said, all right, what is it? So he told me he had what doctors called emphysema, and I understand that is a little different from what doctors call emphysema, the space between the ribs and the lungs fill up with pus, and the doctors take out a rib and insert a tube and then drain and drain and drain, and it seems that one who is subject to that is apt to have it at every time, and they have a cold. So he'd gone to the hospital 3 times and been there a month or two at a time with this thing. So they told him he'd better build himself up physically. His wife's father had a berry farm, and he came up in the summer to work on the berry farm. And when they were through with the berries, he wanted to stay there longer. So he got a job as a common labourer in the grist mill. Well, here this fellow was coming to our services, he and his wife, and this pus was beginning to go through his system. His head was getting a little larger, his clothes didn't fit exactly right, and I told Mrs. Wagers that what I was doing, and she said, please give that up. If he should die on your hands, you would never forgive yourself. So I went down to tell him to get somebody else, but he said, but you are the reader, aren't you? What was I going to say? So he said, I tell you what, my wife and I have this all figured out. We've shaken hands on it. We're going to play this thing out to the end of the string, and you are going to be our practitioner. If I die, that's all right. I'm no good anyway the way I am. So we've decided that's what we are going to do. I had to go away on business that night down to Milwaukee, and when I came back, I had just worked and worked and when I came back the next morning, I could hardly wait until I found out how Mort was. So I called his wife and said, "How is Mort?" And she said, "He's all right." But I didn't like the way she said it. And she said, "Where are you?" And I said, "Over at the office." And she said, "I will be right over." She said, "The night you left, his back opened up as naturally as could be, and pints of that stuff drained out, pints of it. I didn't know what to do, so I washed off the bike, the back, put a pad on it, and waited for you to come back. Within 17 days, after he was away from his work as a common labourer in the grist mill, he was back at work there, and he has never had an experience of it since then. And when I was lecturing up in that area, he would call me. He always liked to get a group of people together, and he would say, 'I'm the reason this fellow is there.'" Well, people began to hear about it around town, not Christian Scientists, and began to come to me with all kinds of things, and they were pretty healed, and they were healed just like that. Well, you can imagine what that would do to you. So pretty soon I had class instruction, and this thing kept working, and we had 12 camps, and I was the top man, and I couldn't go on with the lumber business. I had to get into this work. So we went down to Chicago, and I went into the practice, and things didn't work that way. By golly, it was tough. I thought that things were going to click right along. And so one of our good teachers and lecturers was in town, and I asked him if he would talk to a young buck like me, and he said, "Come on over." Then I told him about this. He got very interested. He said, "Mr. Wagers, when you healed, you said you didn't have any understanding. What did you have?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "I'll tell you what you had. You had a rare, active, living faith. Now, what happened to that faith when you began to get understanding?" "Well," I said, "you don't need faith when you have understanding." "Oh," he said, "is that so?" He said, "You need 100% of your faith. You have got to have faith in what you understand. And if you have got to understand what you, and you have got to understand what you have faith in, then nothing will stop you." He gave me this illustration. Faith is a fruit-bearing tree with its roots buried in understanding. The understanding feeds the tree, and the tree bears the fruit. I thought that was wonderful. Now, there is another thing in this week's lesson. Mentality has to do with thinking and feeling. Thinking is related to mind, and feeling is related to soul. Felt ye the power of the word? Let us feel the divine energy of spirit leading us into newness of life, etc. Science and Health 249. That feeling and faith are very much alike. So when she says the prayer that reforms the sinner and heals the sick is an absolute faith, feeling that all things are possible to God, a spiritual understanding of him, and that's Science and Health, page 1. You can use feeling for faith there because you have got to feel it. Don't you see? In this week's lesson in the responsive reading is, it is given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. Matthew 13. It is given to you to know the spiritual realities of being. Dharmalo says, the mystery of God generally means his plan of salvation for all mankind. Christian Science is mysterious to the materially minded, but to the initiated, the spiritually minded, it is normal and scientific and demonstrable. So in the lesson sermons, if you will just watch and reach out for something that will be helpful, you will find it. Mrs. Eddy says, the healing action of mind upon the body has its only explanation in divine metaphysics. That's Miscellaneous Writings, page 70. She uses metaphysics so much. May I just read you a couple of things here? Put this down, Miscellaneous Writings 194. To reach the consummate naturalness of the life that is God good, we must comply with the first conditions set forth in the text, namely, believe. In other words, understand God sufficiently to exclude all faith in any other remedy but Christ, the truth that antidotes all error. Thence will follow the absorption of all action, motive and mind into the rules and divine principle of metaphysical healing. Then there is something else, Miscellaneous Writings 232, that I think is marvellous. Metaphysical healing, or Christian Science, is a demand of the times. Every man and every woman would desire and demand it if he and she knew its infinite value and firm basis. Then, Retrospection and Introspection, she makes this statement, that's at page 25, the Bible was my textbook. It answered my questions as to how I was healed. But the scriptures had to me a new meaning, a new tongue. Their spiritual signification appeared, and I apprehended for the first time in their spiritual meaning Jesus' teaching and demonstration and the principle and rule of spiritual science and metaphysical healing. In a word, Christian Science. See how she uses the word metaphysical healing there? Now, I'm going to wind this up because I don't want to impose upon you any more. Mrs. Eddy says this, and I think it's marvellous. She says, Science and Health, 466. The science of Christianity comes with fan in hand to separate the chaff from the wheat. Science will declare God aright, and Christianity will demonstrate this declaration and its divine principle, making mankind better physically, morally, and spiritually. Now, just think of it. Christian Science declares, Christianity demonstrates. When I am as scientific as I would be Christian, and as Christian as I would be scientific, then I am a Christian Scientist. This is what a Christian Scientist is. Now, I'm going to close on this statement. We talked about Dragon and Michael and his angels fighting, and the dragon fought and was overcome. Now, what about that Michael? Is he a character way back, 2,000 to 3,000 years ago, or something of the kind? Let's see what Mrs. Eddy says about that. This is Science and Health, page 566. Michael's characteristic is spiritual strength. He leads the hosts of heaven against the powers of sin, Satan, and fights the holy wars. Gabriel has the more quiet task of imparting a sense of the ever-presence of ministering love. These angels deliver us from the depths. Truth and love come nearer in the hour of woe, when strong faith or spiritual strength wrestles and prevails through the understanding of God. The Gabriel of his presence has no contests. To infinite, ever-present love, all is love, and there is no error, no sin, sickness, nor death. Against love the dragon warreth not long, for he is killed by the divine principle. Truth and love prevail against the dragon, because the dragon cannot war with them. Thus endeth the conflict between the flesh and spirit. Now Michael represents truth, and Gabriel represents love, and our church is the structure of truth and love. Therefore, wherever Christian Science is operating, right there is Gabriel and Michael, right with us, truth and love. And when we realize that, we realize that that is the answer to the dragon that hates the spiritual idea and is attempting to prevent the fulfillment of Christian Science in you and in me. But here we have with us Michael and Gabriel both, and when we are aware of that, we have two allies that we can depend upon. I remember a practitioner we had several years ago who was a Michael. She was a fighter. She just would fight at the drop of a hat. She became ill and she called upon me to help her, and I saw this thing very clearly. I said, "Alice, you have been a Michael. But what about Gabriel? Mrs. Eddy says, these angels deliver us from the depths. You haven't made up with Gabriel very much. You've taken up practically all of your time with Michael." "Why," she said, "that's right." She saw the point and was healed very quickly. So in our work, and I know that what you want to do is to bring forth the very best nurses you can, and you can give them the skills they need. There is no question about that, and I imagine they will be as skillful as medical nurses are. But here is something. That is the physical aspect of the work. What about the metaphysical aspect? Now, church manifests itself as movement and organization. Movement is the metaphysical aspect of church. Organization is the physical aspect of church, and the physical derives its vitality from the metaphysical. And so your nurses could probably be as skillful as a good reader could read out of Science and Health without ever making a mistake, but not understand what the words mean. Don't you see? To be a fine reader. Now, your nurses don't want to be only skilled nurses, but they want this metaphysical approach to it that gives vitality and power and healing to the physical aspect of their work. I guess that is about all I have to say. I have some more things I could say, but I don't think you're going to take this sort of thing of the physical and metaphysical without some struggle. I think you're going to be sort of backing up on that a little bit. You will read what our leader has to say about metaphysical metaphysics and divine metaphysics. She says, divine metaphysics explains away matter, Science and Health 278, but it doesn't explain away body or the physical. And Jesus proved that when he explained away the palsy, but not the hand. And so if I could just leave you with this, that there are two words in our book here that I believe you are slighting, just as I have done, and they are the words animal magnetism and metaphysics. I believe if you will just undertake to do a little research on the subject of animal magnetism or error and metaphysics, that you will find it a thrilling experience. I'll tell you the truth, there are some nights when I can hardly get to sleep. I get to going on some of this and I see something new and I go to bed and I just can't do anything but let it unfold and unfold and unfold. And I believe that is what is meant by I make all things new. Do you know that the trouble with us, the apathy and lethargy, etc., that we get into is just the old stuff, going over and over the old stuff without any renewing at all. Life is always new. It's always renewing itself. And let me tell you another thing that will be helpful to you. We are living in the eternal now. Your patient is living in the eternal now. Your patient is not living in the past or in the future. Your patient could not live yesterday if he wanted to, nor can he live tomorrow. He is living now, and he cannot allow himself to try to live in the past and repeat and repeat and repeat things of the past and bring them into the now. He's got to realize that now is the accepted time. Now is the day of salvation. Now the divine mind governs the functions and organs of the human system. I had a patient a while ago who was having quite a time with her stomach, and I said to her, "Do you love your stomach?" She said, "I should say not, and neither would you." I said, "Yes, I think I would." And I explained to her that the word love means to identify the object of your love with its divine source. That's what the word love really means. Could she identify her stomach with its divine source? She said, "Yes, I guess I can. If immortal mind is supreme in the physical realm as well as in the spiritual, and if I can acknowledge the power of mind over the entire functions and organs of the human system, then even the normal functioning of my stomach glorifies God, because if there wasn't God, there wouldn't be any functioning of the stomach. There wouldn't be any harmony. There wouldn't be any perfection." She was healed within a week, and she has been having quite a nice time. So many of your patients, they hate their bodies. "Oh, if I could only get rid of this old body, don't you see, or whatever it might be." And with a right sense of body, they wouldn't say that. Present your body, and if you could help them stay with that, present your body a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Romans 12. And that is the end of this address.